Hello, and welcome to Selling the Skirt with Judy Hoberman. I'm Judy. Welcome back to all of you that have been with me before, and for those of you that are brand spanking new, welcome. Selling in a Skirt is all about community, connection, and creating amazing relationships. We encourage men to champion women, and we also empower professional women. So we do the whole mixed bag. Now, you know, when you've been here before, I always tell you that one of the most exciting things for me is being able to introduce you to some incredible people from all over the place. And today is no exception. So I would like to introduce you. It is my pleasure to introduce you to Michel Koopman. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about him, and then I'm going to let him tell you some more. So Michel is a senior operator and entrepreneur with a mix of small business and corporate success in a global capacity. At this stage, he is most passionate about maximizing the business success and potential of others. He's the CEO and founder of CXO Coaching, and he and his team dedicate their time as growth advisors and executive coaches to high-performing business executives. So that's just the tip of the iceberg. So I want to welcome Michel in, and we are so super excited to have you here, and thank you for being here.
I am just really excited to be here. Judy, thank you for having me.
Thank you. So what I'd love you to start with is, tell us about who you are, why you do what you do, and what you love about doing what you're doing.
No, that's actually a great question. I want to go back to selling in a skirt thing because I absolutely think it's brilliant.
Thank you.
In my long sales career, I've always admired women that are selling better than me as a man. Koopman translates directly into salesman. It's a Dutch name. So at heart, I'm really a salesperson that learned to become a leader over time. So the combination of what you're doing in your practice is really remarkable. You said it. I'm really passionate about maximizing the success of others. And when I'm often asked, well, why is that? People might think it's inauthentic to say that because you're supposed to say that when you run an executive coaching business, that what you're doing, you're passionate about, which is all about maximizing the success of those leaders that you have the honor to coach. The truth is, I love having the fingerprints of the success of others and having the bragging rights to be able to say that we are associated with that success. So my own ego is definitely attached to the wins of those that we're working with. So that's why I love doing what I'm doing, seeing others being successful and having something to do with it. I landed there organically through my career, and I'm really excited to have come to that point.
Okay, so with that said, there's always a backstory. So organically, you landed here. You didn't say when you were little, I'm going to be a salesperson, I'm going to be a coach, I'm going to help people. What's the backstory?
I've had a number of different careers. If I think about it, just about every 5 years, you could argue I've been in a different industry. The thread throughout it has definitely been sales, especially in the beginning. When I was a young man, I was raised in an entrepreneurial family, a business that my dad left behind when I was a late teenager. So I decided to move to the States, and I did that. Moved with a backpack, went to school by myself. Family is still in Europe, and it is actually quite hard to get a job when you don't have a working permit. So I fell organically into a role where they needed a person that had one skill that no other American had, which I was only one. You can probably guess what that was, and that is I spoke Dutch. So I got the first job. Yeah, had the first job that I took the first job that actually I was qualified for, which was a sales job in the world of enterprise software. And about 15 years later, no, sorry, I exaggerate. Yeah, about 13 years later, I was able to climb from a starting professional to a mid-level executive in an enterprise software company, and did some remarkable firsts along the way. And I was a hard-charging, get-it-done, smart-nosed young professional. And looking back at that, there was a lot of lessons learned about that, which later on in a career as a leader and a coach, you get to capitalize on. But when I left corporate America, left a $3 billion company as a managing director, I had an opportunity to operate a smaller business. millions of dollars of business. And that was in the HR tech world. So my clients were actually the senior executives that run talent and human capital management inside of Fortune 500 companies. So I got to see the world through the eyes of these incredibly mindful, purposeful HR executives while I was building a company as a leader. And our solution summarized business books, so I got to learn the content of leadership and rub shoulders with the most remarkable best-selling book authors, some of which you've known, whether it's Marshall Goldsmith or Andy Stavanovich or Lisa McLeod or any of these remarkable authors. And so that was a real lesson learned. And after that, after 5 years of doing that, and I'll cut it off there, I naturally was asked by other CEOs to help them with their business growth. And that led me to lead, not just coaching on business growth, but coaching on the business, but coaching on the person, and hence TXO Coaching and the entire team around it and the methodologies and so forth were born. So it happened very naturally. And as I matured in those roles, I got to really love seeing others successful, and you become naturally servant and purposeful in the process.
Which is really interesting, because a lot of people wouldn't have taken all of those lessons, all of those opportunities to learn. I mean, rubbing shoulders with people that, who would have those opportunities? So I think that's awesome. But I want to go back to what you were really good at in the beginning, which were the sales. And I don't know if most people love sales. I would say that many times people don't want to be known as that salesperson, because for some reason, when you say sales, they think, they have this horrible vision and all these negative thoughts about it. But why does sales have to be so negative when in fact you can't have a business if you don't have sales?
Well, you're 100% right. I love that comment. In fact, whenever I sit down with other business partners or CEOs, I always remind them that sales solves all problems. It's a little cheeky, but it's true. I'll be honest with you. In the beginning of my career, I don't think I embraced sales as a positive thing. I believe that the carrying of a quota and the pursuit of sales and contracts was intimidating to me. I don't know if it was dirty, as you are implying, or less than. No, I don't think so. I think I was intimidated by the pressure thereof. What I realized later is that I absolutely love the pursuit of it, the athleticism of it, the goal, getting over the goal line, and then the multiplicity of those deals together making an impact on the business was very exciting to me. And throughout, I realized that, people have always talked about, you're not selling products, you're selling solutions. Okay, great. And that's true. That's an evolution that has happened. But more importantly, when you're selling something with the ultimate value in mind, the impact that your solution or your product will have, not just on the customers, but even on the customers' customers, that's when you know that you can be passionate about what it is you're selling. And then the process becomes exciting as well.
My earpiece just fell out, sorry. To me, sales is nothing more than a conversation, because from a hello, you can build a relationship, right? So tell everybody, why is it so important to maintain, to nurture those relationships? Because are they not the major successful point in a sales?
Well, I love your question, and I'm going to maybe give you a bit of a controversial answer.
That's okay.
Okay. I'm not considering myself a relationship salesman. I don't consider myself that. I do agree with you 1,000% that nobody will buy anything from anyone they don't like.
Absolutely.
So it's definitely a disqualifier. However, just because you know somebody, and I know you agree with this, Judy, but if not, please tell me, that you will not buy from someone because you like them, because there needs to be merit to what it is that you're buying. There has to be a need, and 100%. There's a process of of educating the buyer on a solution that they might not realize they need, that solves a problem that they're really struggling with, then you got to lead to sales in a very proactive manner, I should say, and customize the solution along the way. It's a bit like what the challenger sale methodology talks about. And this is in a B2B environment. Of course, in the B2C environment, it's quite different. But yes, maintaining relationships throughout your careers, I do agree with you 1,000%. If I go back to the early years, I was probably 15, 16 years old, and my dad came home from a business trip, and he used to travel quite a bit, and would be gone for weeks at a time sometimes. And cell phones didn't exist. There was faxes and telexes in those days. He would come home with a binder of business cards, Judy, and I would sit there trying to catch up with dad. I would sit on the floor, I remember, and he would put his little cards in a binder, and he looked at me and he said, "Michelle, you should never throw out a business card because you never know when you're going to need it." So nurturing that network is critically important, and being a giver in the process, adding value to people when you have touch points, is important. And the controversial part of it is, I actually don't think people buy from you because you like them. And I would take it a step further. I generally don't start a sales strategy going after people I know, but rather people that need me. And if they happen to know me, that adds value, that makes it easier. And I tell my sales team that all the time. What do you think about that?
Well, one of the things, first of all, I will agree that there's a reason why people buy from you, because you have a solution to something they need, not just because they like you. And I learned that from my very first sales call when I was selling Fuller Brush. Now, if you're not from the States originally, you probably wouldn't remember Fuller Brush, but it was true door-to-door sales with brooms, mops, brushes, things that really, not anything that you would say, "Oh, I love my job," right? So my very first door was my mom. And I knock on the door, that firm knock, and she answers it, and I thought, "Well, this is going to be easy." And she said no. But she taught me two lessons. She taught me two lessons. Number one, she said, "Just because somebody loves you doesn't mean they're going to buy from you." Exactly what you just said. Number two, she said, "Just because somebody loves you, they're going to share you with their friends," which is what she did, because she knew people that needed mops and brooms and whatever, you
Of
know.
course.
So I agree with the
That's
fact
great.
that you don't have to buy from somebody that you love, but you're still building a relationship. You don't have to be a relationship-driven salesperson. You're still making that contact. You're still giving them some information. You're still listening to what they need. And for me, if you can't leave them better off, then you leave them alone. And I've talked myself out of many sales. So I agree that not everybody is a relationship person, but you're still, even with you saying hello and even with you listening, you're still building a relationship.
I agree with that. And Judy, in a way, sales is no more than a conversation.
Correct.
I agree with you on that comment. But the emphasis is the definition of a conversation. Many salespeople show up and throw up.
That's right.
You know,
That was
they
my next
or they
point. Yeah.
list are they listen for the answers to the questions they were meaning to ask versus actually having a conversation. If you have the art of the conversation down, you will find out what the customer or the prospect, I should say, really needs, and also qualify or disqualify whether or not at this point in time you can add
Could you?
value.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So okay, I'm going to take that one step further. To be successful in sales, there is another piece to it. There really is. Other than listening, there is one more piece to it that I find when somebody hires me to be their sales coach, 99 times out of 100, it is not about sales at all. It's not about sales. It's about everything that leads up to the sale. It's about motivation. It's about knowledge, but it's really about confidence. Do you have the confidence to sit with somebody and listen? Do you have the confidence to be able to decipher what they're saying? Do you have the confidence to ask them the right questions? So what does confidence actually mean to you? And when are you the most confident in either a sales situation or in a coaching situation or in your company as a whole? When are you the most confident? Because I believe that you don't have to be aggressive to be confident. You just have to be able to do what you say you're going to do. Listen and be ready.
It's a great question, and I think there's a lot of philosophy and psychology in it. And I don't know if there's one answer, but just to first reiterate your point, one of the first sales leaders that I work for said to me, the most successful sales professional is a confident sales professional. I do believe that confidence is directly related to the success of a sales professional, meaning that they consistently meet or beat their goals. But if you become too confident and borderline arrogant, it has the exact opposite goal, the ex sorry, effect, right? You asked how am I most confident and or what, how do I become confident? I think that confidence comes from being prepared. Lack of confidence comes from not knowing what the outcome will be. And therefore, if you are more familiar with what the outcome might be, therefore you're more confident. And so the formula becomes, how do I ensure that the outcome is more predictable? And here are some things that you can do where the outcome becomes more predictable. Whether and confidence is important both in selling an actual sales process or a presentation or an important meeting, right? So let's bundle that together. One is research or preparation. Seriously, if you are doing a formal presentation, rehearse it. I'm saying the obvious. Or if you walk into a first-time meeting, do your research. I remember every bit of research I've ever done when I make a first-time call in a large company, whether I walk into Disney or MillerCoors or Harley-Davidson, I take the time to do genuine interest in demonstrate genuine interest by doing research on the person, the company, and the industry, though just the different levels, to get a sense of the environment, the context, or even the corporate or personal aspirations that that individual or that company might have. So that builds confidence, right? Rehearsing what you're going to say up to a point, still allowing it to be natural, helps. I have many other points, but I'll give you some two very, very different ones if you like. One of the things that people are always afraid of is, well, what if they don't like me? What if they judge me? What if they think I'm not smart enough, right? I mean, everybody has that. Then this moment, I feel I'm going to be so embarrassed, right? Well, everybody who gets to be as old as me has had experiences that were probably a lot tougher than the one you're about to walk in. Or have had moments that are beautiful in the past that make you feel really happy. So the two things you can play with to boost that little confidence before that meeting is, listen, this meeting is sort of inconsequential and unimportant, even if I completely flop, because I was able to get through this other horrible thing in my past. So this meeting is nothing compared to that. I got through that, so I will get through this. Or you can say, what is the happiest moment in my life? Let me think about that before I walk in there. And then it's also insignificant. So making that moment insignificant in the grand scheme of things actually boosts your confidence, if that makes any
I
sense.
love that. I love that. That's a great way to look at it. But I want to go back to what you said also about researching the people, researching the company, researching the whole thing, because that also makes a significant moment for them. So when you come in and you congratulate them on an award that they got for doing something in the community, or that somebody was just promoted, when you do that and you make it significant for them, what's their reaction when you say something? Because I know when I go in and I comment on an award that they just did, they're thinking to themselves, how did she know that? Like, how did she do that? So do you get, are you met with, like, their guard is down almost because they're thinking, this is a
Well, yeah,
professional salesperson.
I mean, it's an echo chamber in a way, because when you walk in, making them feel that you demonstrated interest in them and they smile to you, they give you maybe a compliment or recognition, Now you feel, now boosts your confidence again. When it boosts your confidence, then you're going to end up asking the next curious question because you have the confidence to ask that question. Now you're going to dig deeper and deeper, and it becomes an echo chamber of relevant, like you said, conversation.
Yeah.
And when I talk about leadership superpowers or sales skills that I would hire for, one of them is, number one actually, is natural curiosity.
Yeah, absolutely.
For me, that is, because it's very hard to teach it. You got to be naturally interested and curious and almost nosy in a respectful manner to unlock remarkable conversations.
Okay, so let me ask you a question. Do you ever visualize yourself on the other side of the sales call? Like what it's going to look like, right? And does that calm you down? Does that give you more confidence? What does that do for you? Because it sounds like that, you know, you are intimidated, you know, you're saying that without saying I'm visualizing it.
Well, I'm getting a little bit of chills about what you said, because honestly, I think we're very much aligned.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, that is critical. In fact, the way I describe it, you can talk about empathy as a way for you to see the world through the eyes of the other person, or take it a step further. If you were an actor, cast yourself in the role of the other person and try to see the world through their eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Understand the challenges they have, the context they live in, the pressures, the aspirations, the questions, concerns they might have. Now, those are, you know, it's dangerous to make a lot of assumptions. You've got to be very mindful of it. But when you do that, you're so much closer to seeing the world through their eyes. And when I do that in combination with the data, the research, but then you start to pontificate how old they are, maybe what their cultural background is, how long they've been at the company. You might start to imagine whether they have lots of family pressure or not, how many people work for them, how long they've been at the company. You start to figure out what would the world be like for me, if I was in that place, right? That really helps. And it really boosts my confidence, or the confidence of any salesman. But I will tell you, I had, sometimes you get it wrong.
Yeah.
I got it wrong last week. I got a call from a prospect, and they gave me some feedback that was negative. And I didn't realize that our approach was wrong. And so every time you continue to learn, so I don't always get this right. I remember that. And that actually was really disappointing to me. And it for the next two or three phone calls, I was over conscientious and less confident because of that feedback. And then you got to work on that again and build that back up.
And most probably you were very, you know, nervous about getting that feedback again. So you're going to do everything you can by the book, which is not as natural as what Michelle would ordinarily do. You know, that
100%.
It's, you know, it's also, think about like the stressful sales calls that you do. One of the things you talk about is the power of the pause. And I think that is a very powerful thing to do when you're presenting, when you're in a, you know, a stressful situation. I just recently was listening to a podcast and heard the same thing about the power of the pause. And I remember taking people on sales calls with me, and when I would pause, didn't know anything about power of the pause, but when I would pause, you could see them sweating. Like, why is she stopping? Like, why isn't she just talking? Why isn't she, like, you know, just throwing up everything she could think of? Tell us what your thoughts are about the power of the pause, because I think that even in after the feedback that you got, power of the pause was probably a good thing. So tell us what it means and why it is so very powerful.
Well, a couple things. The first and foremost, the pause affords the speaker or presenter or the one that has the mic an opportunity to collect our thoughts. It really that simple. And by doing that, as I'm slowing it down right now, just to demonstrate it, you're able to think about what you're gonna say. And when you have more time to think about what you're gonna say, your confidence gets boosted, if we're still talking about confidence, right? Because you're able to predict what's coming out of your mouth. I also believe the second point here is that a point well made has a beginning, a middle, and an end. And if you jump right in, you don't get to really think about that. When you take a moment to pause, you can think about, let me summarize what I'm about to say, then let me say it with an example or an illustration, and then let me conclude what I just said, right? Third, contrary to someone's intuition, pausing doesn't make people feel that you don't know what you're going to say or that you're weak. It actually makes the listeners on the other end feel that this person is in control of the airtime and they don't mind wasting it. On top of that, and my final point would be, is when you pause, or even when you lower your tone versus yelling, some people tend to yell when you're ever in an argument and someone lowers their voice and slows down, you actually command more power. So the power of the pause, I think, is both a wonderful crutch for you to buy time and two, a wonderful tool to command power.
Because it interrupts exactly what somebody thought was going to happen, and now they're waiting to see what's going to happen next. And when you said that people lower their voice in an argument, that's a very uncomfortable thing to watch, because nobody knows who's going to react which way.
But when you have been in a sales and leadership role as long as you, Judy, then I think you also start to have fun with it.
Yeah, without question.
Because you recognize the moments when you can do it, and you start doing it almost as a sport. It might be a bit of a guilty pleasure, but it works.
It does work. It does work. And it is very, very, very powerful. So I want to go back to one more thing that you mentioned, because I let it slip really fast. You were talking about superpowers, you were talking about curiosity, and I know there's also empathy, and there's, you know, all kinds of strategic thinking and whatever. What's your superpower?
What's my superpower? Oh, now that's always hard to do, because I don't know if the way I perceive my superpowers, others would also perceive it to be the same. But when I really think about it, I believe that one of the things I'm blessed with is a very logical very logical brain that is able to very quickly understand what the sequence of steps are to get from a problem to a solution or from A to B.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also blessed with pretty good EQ, and those things together allow me to get a read on a situation and figure out the right course forward. I think it's a combination of empathy and natural curiosity, really. You know, those two things.
Awesome. So logical brain to logical brain, because I'm very logical. What happens when you can't make it logical? Like there's something going on and you can't make it logical. Do you keep asking questions until it becomes logical? Or what do you do? Because I know people start to roll their eyes at me because it's just not logical, and I'm trying to, you know, make it logical in my brain.
You're right. As a logical brain, and I know my personality profile definitely confirms that's what I am. I tend to want to figure out, you know, the reasons why things are the way they are. And sometimes there isn't a good reason. And the way to get closer to a reason or multiplicity of reasons is by asking more and more questions that have to do with why.
Yep.
Still though, you might end up landing in a place that is borderline psychology versus coaching.
I thought you were going to say psychotic.
No, psychology, right? It's a different practice where all of a sudden you need to peel back the onion on things that have to do with scars from the past or stories that should be left untold in an executive coaching situation. But then when you land there, when you realize that's what it is, it's still logical.
Yeah.
In my mind, right? It's just, okay, we're not going to go there. Let's look at how we can handle things at work or handle this leadership situation, taking in consideration that this is how this person is or feels or acts, and having an open conversation about it. If somebody feels uncomfortable about a conversation with a particular person and it is not logical, then we just have to figure out how to avoid that conversation or how to add someone else in that room, whatever the situation may be. There's
Agreed.
still a logical solution to it.
Because I was just in one yesterday, and no matter how hard I tried to explain what I was trying to explain, and using, graphs and figures and all kinds of things, and there was a missing piece there. It was
I will
crazy.
tell you that I will tell you the one thing is the truth is I don't have the solution for everything,
Nobody does.
and that right. But one of the things that I pride myself on is that we've built a team of nearly 20 very diverse coaches, diverse in the traditional sense, but also in the way that they approach this problem. I have this one amazing coach. She is a true empath, and if especially a woman is on a real internal journey, that might have to do with first time being a mom and having to balance career and home. That internal journey is not always logical and very emotional in nature. Well, then I often we switch coaches and we give someone else a run at that particular problem. And they solve it differently than I would. And whether it's, Patty, Rob, Randall, Erica, or any of those other coaches, everyone has their own method to ask the questions and identify what the problem is.
Right, and it's not right or wrong, it's just different, which is the best
Yeah,
part. Okay,
100%.
so now you've just tiptoed right into my favorite topic, which are women. Obviously, we know that. And one of my most interesting topics to talk about is the lonely leader. And the lonely leader is a woman who has gotten to a certain level. She's not sure who she can talk to. She's not sure who has an agenda, who doesn't have an agenda. She's not sure, if she feels isolated, who can you trust? So my question to you is, because you are coaching so many different people, well, the first question I want to ask is, do you believe that there are more opportunities for women in leadership positions, but for some reason we just can't get them there? And that's like the million-dollar question. Do you believe there's more opportunities available for women? That's the question.
Oh yeah, of course there are. I mean, the numbers show that that is the case. I will tell you, it's situational by company. I will tell you, I'm working with one company, a remarkable company out of Texas, actually, very large company, nearly $3 billion in size, and more than 50% of their women of their VPs are women. Amazing. Wasn't that way 10 years ago. So maybe at that company specifically, it's well balanced. And then and then the road forward is whatever next opening is there, the best next qualified individual would get that job. And there's many other companies where I don't see that yet, and they're actively working towards identifying when there's an opening, seeing if there is a female that could really fit that job. So yes, I mean you're touching on a really important topic, and I'll tell you one thing. Maybe that's a good jumping off point. Is what I've found. Let me take a step back. Personally, as an organization, we coach as many women as we do men. It's about 50-50. Personally, I've coached probably 60% men, women, and 40% men. It is coincidentally that way. It just happened to be that way. And maybe next year, if I add it up, it might be different. What I have found is not always is that women tend to ask less frequently, less aggressively for the next level, for the next promotion. And men are predisposed to do that. It's part of their nature. And I wonder, and I'd like your opinion on this, if that is one of the reasons why, you're asking this question.
I am asking that question, and that is one of the reasons, because I do believe that a lot of times women don't raise their hand and say, I would like that next position, or they're not sure if they're ready for it. And if they said yes and fail, then what happens? And if they say no, will they get another opportunity for that particular position again, or something similar to that? And it's happened so many times. You know, I remember when I was promoted to an agency manager, I was so not ready to do that. Like, no, not at all. There was no training, there was nothing. I also knew in that particular company, if you said no, you'd never be asked again. So I had to say yes, because I really did want it eventually, and then figure out my own playbook. So with going there, my question would then be to you is, as an external coach for all these companies, do you believe that it's better to have somebody from the outside come in who doesn't have any biases, who doesn't know all the inside nonsense, so that a woman could be heard and said to you, you know, I really do want this position, how do I do it? You know, is it better to have somebody externally, or because a lot of companies are trying to save money and use their internal people, which I don't believe is always the right case.
Well, I mean, I'm obviously going to say people,
I know you,
on
you,
the
but
outside
I,
is, yeah. but I also see it in reality.
Yes.
But you need people on the inside of a company that is a steward for great leaders, great professionals being given opportunities to excel. Of any and all diversities,
right?
Okay, so there needs to be a culture around that that nurtures that diversity, drives innovation, creativity, and ultimately profit. It's all related, right? It's a lever towards greatness. So that needs to be internally there. Ironically, most of the women that I and the rest of my coaches tend to work with are high potentials that have already been promoted into remarkable roles. Chief operating officers, presidents, senior vice presidents, vice presidents, and multi-billion dollar companies. And when they get there, they've worked really hard to get there. And sometimes they've gotten there probably a year, two, four, 5 years later than a man might have gotten there. And then when they got there, they are there in a solid manner, in a solid manner. Still though, most of them suffer from some level of being not completely authentic about who they are. Because in order to get there in a fairly, not always, but fairly male environment, they had to give up part of their style in order to fit in. And they might not even realize it sometimes they do, but when they get back to, when they're finally at that level to get back to the balance of who they are at work, who they are internal, who they are at home, and finding that right balance of authenticity usually unlocks that next level of executive leadership. And that is a difficult thing to do.
Yeah, I agree. So at that point, you know, as their coach, you know, obviously you're gonna give them your thoughts and suggestions and have them consider certain things. One of the things I know for a fact that is number one on every woman's list, and probably some men, but on every one of every woman's list, is about balancing. And how do they balance all these new responsibilities that they've gotten with this executive position? How do you do that and still be effective? How do you do that when people, you know, without people looking at you and saying, well, maybe you're just not ready for this? You know, how do they do that? Even when they're jumping in both feet, they're ready for this, it's come later than it should have, and all of that. Balance is still major, and in today's environment, it's even more than ever. So what do you suggest? How do they start to really grow into this position the right way and still have a life?
Well, you know, I don't know if I'm going to answer this question specifically through the eyes of a female executive as much as
you can
as
do
I'm
it. It could be either way. Either way.
Yeah. When people get to that next level, you're going from maybe first you're a frontline manager, then you become a director or maybe senior director, and then you're vice president. But when you get to that large company SVP, EVP level, there's a lot of change that happens, right? Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, you are going from one or a few practice areas that you run to being a general manager above a number of different groups or a number of different teams, sometimes functional areas. Yeah, you might be in marketing, but all of a sudden you've got performance marketing, brand marketing, you've got social marketing, you've got all packaging, whatever it is, right? And that could be very overwhelming. There's a lot of things that need to happen for that person to evolve to that next level. And one area to really, you know, maintain some level of sanity is for you to really start leveraging your team to do a lot of remarkable work for you. And that's easily said than done, because, you know, if you're going from that mid-level to that senior level, you say, oh, that's easy, I'll just assign this to John and this to Mary and this to whatever, right? It's not that.
Right.
It's you really got to go from being respected to being admired. You really got to go from not only talking about what the work is, but why the work is important. You got to lead with passion. And because you own so much stuff now, you're no longer an expert in all of it. So you got to build trust within the team. You got to trust the individuals based on their skill sets and their resumes and their past performance, not only because you like them and they like you. That's no longer as relevant. And that maturation allows you to scale the business based on the talent, that you, identifying the right talent and nurturing that talent and being that internal coach, really, for your team. When you do that, you can more easily rest at night that your team's got it. And what you then are responsible for is vision and air cover and outreach to the rest of the organization and thinking about what's next.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. That's a really good point. There's so much to talk about, Michelle. There so much is. But my question to you is, knowing you as well as I do, and I don't know you that well, what are you looking forward to for the rest of 2024? How do you, you know, to make a positive impact and to do all the things that you want to do? Because you have a, you know, you have great vision. You have great goals. What are you the most excited about?
Oh, wow. Well, I mean, it's going to sound simple. I love what we do as a team. And I love my team. I hope they love me too. You know, most of the individuals that are doing the coaching, we've worked together for over 10 years. Mm-hmm. So it's really exciting when we get on the phone and we talk about a success of a particular client, because we create these teams that are on a particular client and we meet on a regular basis. And, at the end of a year, we look in review and say, okay, that was great. We're going to do better. I want to just do more of it. As a businessman, what is exciting for me is to see the growth of a company and all the levers thereof. So we are actively working on additional tools for the coaches that are in the program. We're adding new coaches. We're enhancing and elaborating our standard operating procedures. We're adding group coaching services, HR services. So to see that growth and managing it very mindfully, because ultimately what you want is the success of the people that we're serving, is exciting. But we are definitely seeing 2024 as that next stage in our firm. And that's exciting to me to, you know, build it out.
Well, I'm excited to see it happen. So you know there's going to be people that want to connect with you. What's the best way for our listeners to do that with you?
Well, they can email me directly or go to our website. My email is Michelle, M-I-C-H-E-L, at cxocoaching.io. Or you can go to our website, cxocoaching.io, and fill out the form and reach out to me, and I'll personally get back to them.
Awesome, awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to be with me today. This has been great. And you know that we have a good banter going back and forth, and we have some of our opinions are exactly the same and some of them are counter, which is good. We like that too. So I really, really appreciate having you here.
Judy, thank you for having me. I always learn from you and would like to continue to do so. I appreciate the opportunity to connect with you and your audience. And I look forward to doing it again sometime in the future.
Absolutely.
Have a nice day.
You too. Thank you. Thank you all for being with me today on Selling in a Skirt with Judy Hoberman. Until next time, we'll see you soon.